Hello and welcome to Radio Gorgeous. Candida Merrick gave up sugar over 4 years ago and rarely drinks alcohol. She found it nigh impossible to find a restorative grown-up drink that was not a herbal tea bag. So she invented something completely original. She's come all the way from Anglesey, a tiny island off the North Wales coast, to tell us all about it. Hi, welcome to Radio Gorgeous.
Hello, thank you very much for having me here.
It's so exciting.
And Donna's here today as well.
Welcome to 2019.
Exactly. It's so exciting. So, Candida, tell us about why did you have to give up sugar? Because I didn't realise this until you walked in today.
Yeah, no, so I'd always been a bit sort of sugar light and kind of health minded, but I had cancer 3 years ago. And so
cancer
suddenly it was breast cancer. Mm. It had gone to the lymph and nasty things like that. But I realised at that point, when you are basically given a sugary drink before they give you a scan in order to find out where your tumour is, because it's the only way they can find it when the sugar in the drink goes to feed it. I realised at that moment, like a big kind of, you know, more than a penny dropping, like a kind of bomb going off. It's like, my goodness, that is why, you know, sugar really is number one kind of, you know, demonic thing to quit, which made it very easy to quit it. So all the massive health benefits of having done so, you know, energy levels go through the roof. It's just generally an all round win-win thing with that. But anyway, so but what was amazing, at that point, I was already a number of years in to the business of restoring this incredible 5-acre walled garden. I mean, it's an absolute sort of, used to be a kind of jewel of you know, gardens. Paxton went to look at it to see how to do greenhouses. Kew Gardens went to look, 60-foot palm houses. I mean, it was an incredible thing. Yeah, it was amazing. And when I first saw it, it was totally derelict. And my husband used this amazing phrase, oh, that used to be a garden. And I'm incredible. And so I kind of peeked through and it was just like the secret garden all over again. It was so exciting. So I started about 10 years ago, started restoring it very, very slowly.
Well, out of a hobby?
Well, it was it was in a way a hobby, but I think it was more to do with just, you know, there seeming something so obviously unhealthy about living in this incredible place with this incredible garden just sort of sitting there dormant, really kind of, you know, bothered me.
So is it a kitchen garden then?
Yeah, so it's a 5-acre kitchen garden, so 5 acres within the walls.
That's massive.
It's massive. Yeah, it's absolutely massive.
And it needs walls, obviously.
It needs walls.
Especially where you are, I imagine. It's a little bit windy.
It's really windy. Yeah. So walls are quite important. Tall yew hedges are quite important.
So tell us about, so you, 10 years ago, did you go and live there and then...
Yeah, no, so my husband's family had been there for 700 years, quite a long time. And so we took over about 5 years ago from my parents-in-law. But before then, I'd started tinkering away at the garden anyway.
And what was it? Describe it, please.
Well, originally, you could push the door open a tiny fraction and just about get half of your head round, and all you could see was a thicket and these massive, massive high trees. And we actually had a man called Jonathan Thicket, appropriately enough, who had a sort of machete and a chainsaw, who got us in there and then phoned me one day and said, oh my God, Mrs. Merrick, there are buildings still in there, which we hadn't even realised. Wow. And it was so big, it was unreal. And it was so beautiful. Anyways, but the interesting thing is a lot of people said at the beginning, they said, don't begin it. Don't attempt to restore it. You'll just bankrupt yourself. Don't attempt to restore it until you have an end in sight, something you know you want to do. I don't know, open to the public, run a market garden, whatever it is. But I happen to think that that attitude is completely wrong, because I think sometimes just beginning the thing gives it momentum. You know, I was dreaming about, you know, because I was still drinking alcohol at that stage, I was dreaming about cocktail borders. I'd be inspired by Anik, and I was thinking, you know, we're going to do all this kind of stuff too with botanicals, probably gin, and that's what I imagine myself doing. Well, you know, but something like that. I knew it was going to be something businessy, but I also knew, and this is really not just hype, I knew I had to do something that kind of put stuff back onto the island, because it used to employ 40 gardeners. It was this hub of innovation. It had patents coming out of the garden, gardeners who invented kind of incredible hot walls and all sorts of stuff. Mm. So it wasn't a place.
When was it at its peak then?
I would say it was sort of early 1800s.
Early
to mid, yeah, it was long time.
So that's when they first brought in sort of, oh no, pineapple's already here. Was that when hothouses?
Yeah, so late 1700s to kind of late 1800s. So it was a fairly long heyday, but I suppose probably 1850s is more like its real heyday.
Yeah.
When it had a 60-foot palm house and, you know, pineapples, melon pits.
So people kind of would stuff. Was it open to the public?
Or? Well, it was open to the public in a really interesting way. It was sort of, you know, by invitation, and coach loads, by which I mean a coach and four, would arrive and people would go and look round it. It was written about in lots of gardening magazines of the time as being, you know, this jewel, you know, this kind of hidden paradise people describe
now, because
being.
Of where it is, which is the west coast of Britain, does it have, you know, can you grow palm trees? Is it softer weather?
Yeah, so it's much softer weather. So we rarely get a frost. And when we do, it kind of, it's, there's a sort of frost pocket in the garden where it's angled. So we can grow some really amazing things. So for example, unlike most places in the UK, we can grow things like stevia, which is sort of South American plant. So we grow that for the potions, and we can grow it outside. We started off inside, but...
Which is the sweetener.
Which we use in one of the potions called Bliss. All of the others don't have anything sweet in it, but we use that as a...
Were you a gardener prior to this?
Well, you know, I had a city garden in London, and then I had a garden in the country, you know, for a number of years. And I've always grown stuff, and I've always wanted to do stuff. But I definitely never had anything, even if, I mean, it's a sort of a joke. And I'm not, I don't consider myself a gardener as such, in the sense that, you know, I'm planting some of the stuff, but, you know, I have help there. Because it's quite kind of, you know, but I have done a lot of planting and digging.
So you have this amazing space. Someone had put a seed in your head that you've got to have some sort of idea. You got cancer. You gave up sugar. When did the actual ping go off and the potions were invented?
Well, I think the actual, there was an actual ping. There was a ping moment, and it was the summer before last. So it was really recently. And it was literally growing herbs that were... you know, they were growing already in the garden, and it was kind of playing around with them. I mean, it's a classic in the kitchen with my children moment when I was looking around and thinking, there is just nothing for me to drink out there that doesn't contain sugar, alcohol, artificial sweeteners, or just crap. Am I allowed to say that?
Yes.
You know, absolutely.
Please swear.
Yeah. No, but it really staggered me. And I, you know, brew my kombucha and kefir water, but generally when you buy commercial ones, they've been pasteurized and they're full of sugar. And there was literally nothing out there. And I was drinking at this stage, this is when I was in the dark days, when I was drinking, like, you know, 5 liters of dark green juice every day, which is, you know, it's okay for me, but it's not something everyone else is going to do, and it's not something you're going to take to a party, you know. It's just like it was a joke. People would laugh at me. I was coming like splattered in dark green kind of gunk from all the kale. It's horrific. So I wanted something that was just gorgeous and scrumptious, and that made you think, well, hey, I'm treating myself, but that actually did you good. And I thought, how is it possible that that thing does not exist? It struck me as being staggering. So I started playing around with literally sort of rose petals, you know, thyme, nettles, everything that was just growing there, cleavers. And then I've always been interested in herbalism, so then started looking at the different properties of things and thinking, you know, how about and what if, and then just looking things up, talking to some herbalists, and realizing that there was this method by which you could extract these properties of herbs. It's the same method a herbalist would use to make a herbal glycerite, which they would give to a child as a sort of tincture, so a non-alcohol-based tincture.
Like rose hip.
Like rose hip, exactly. Yeah. But without the sugar that you'd usually have to make a syrup. And so I tried with this method and thought...
Because, of course, sugar is a preservative.
Yeah, that's why it's in things.
You know, so it stabilises. Yeah. So, you know, how did you do it then?
Well, I think all... I think sugar preservative, but I think also, just to bang on about sugar slightly more, is I think the sinister thing about sugar, in my opinion, is the fact that it has this sort of, you know, sweet spot, which is this addictive spot. So people actually don't necessarily like things sweet. It's just they simply are addicted. So they think to themselves, oh, I really feel like some, I don't know, even if it's something simple like gluten-free bread, generally speaking, there'll be sugar in there, or a burger. It's not that they want the meat, it's they want the sugar. And they've just got this low-grade addiction. Until you quit that, and then you suddenly realise that most things containing sugar taste like junk in your mouth once you've quit it, you're an addict, really, aren't you, in a way?
So we're addicts without knowing.
Without knowing it. Yeah. And that's what's so sinister. I think eat a big slab of cake by all means. You know, I'm up with that. Because you know you're getting a slab of cake, it will contain sugar. But when it's something you don't expect to find it in, I think that's really wicked.
Yes, I was very upset because my daughter, we really like rough oat cakes, and they were sent from Scotland. And my daughter was like, these are really sweet. And I thought, I'll have a look at the packet.
Yeah.
It said sugar. And I thought, why have they put sugar in oat cakes?
What's that about?
You know, so I'm thinking of learning to bake my own.
You know, absolutely.
Yeah.
Nans don't have sugar, incidentally.
Oh, really? Okay.
Walkers do, nans don't.
Okay.
So the method.
The method to keep it stable.
So I wanted a method to keep it stable that would be no alcohol, nothing sort of, you know, palm oil, whatever related, nothing that involved, you know, so you can make a hydrosol, but that's incredibly labor intensive and may not get the best taste result. I didn't want to have heat, because after speaking to these herbalists, you realize it obviously breaks down a lot of the structures, monkeys with the phenols. You don't want to do any of that. You want the full power of the herb. And the way to do it is, it's a really simple method, anyone can do it, is basically you're extracting it, cold maceration over 6 weeks in a mixture of vegetable glycerin and water. The vegetable glycerin we use is this sort of, you know, it's a non-palm, non-soy, it's not an organic one, but it's this kind of, you know, hypoallergenic, comes from oilseed rape. Added benefits, it's kind of big collagen boosting thing. It's very easily absorbed by your liver. And ours comes, because like, MRs is really important to us, it comes locally from the UK and a bit in Europe.
Tell us what you do.
You
pick some herbs.
Yeah, so basically, well, so it really is incredibly simple. So by which I mean, I pick the herbs. Mm. I've got some people who also help me pick the herbs, but I basically go and pick the herbs, take them to the house, dry them.
Does drying make a difference to them?
Yeah, it's important for the stability just to dry them out first. Mm. So because then you're rehydrating them in the mixture. So it can be unstable if it's not dried first.
Yeah.
So you dehydrate, will dry them, and then you basically put them in a mixture of, so there's no secret in the ingredient, in the recipe rather, you just put them in a mixture of vegetable glycerin and distilled water or spring water.
What in, porcelain or metal?
Importantly, in a big glass, 5 litre kiln of jars. So it's a really handmade thing.
Fabulous. Yeah.
And you put them in these things, and then you...
Do you put them in a cool room?
And you put them in a nice old cool room,
which you've probably got lots of outhouses.
Got lots of yes. Yeah, so you put them in a nice cool room, and then you basically shake them every day for 6 weeks.
Oh my god!
Agitate. That's
your exercise.
That's my exercise. But I also
you're doing a lot of shaking.
I'm doing a lot of shaking, but also when I'm not physically in Anglesey, because I spend a chunk of the year down south, when I'm not physically there, I have a lovely man called Jim and a lovely lady called Fiona. I must thank them on air.
Yeah.
And they do this stuff, so they shake.
Your movers and shakers.
They're my movers and shakers. My right-hand people, our head gardener Joe Anderson, he will be doing some harvesting while I'm not there, so we're getting more and more people involved, so basically you shake it every day for 6 weeks, and then at the end of the 6 weeks you then strain it into a nice big, you know, kind of vat thing, and then you put it straight into bottles.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sterilise the bottles first.
Yeah,
sterilise.
Yeah, they're ready sterile. Yeah. We buy the sort of, you know.
You buy
glass.
Them ready.
So they're glass bottles. So glass bottles.
Yeah.
Sterilise the bottles, put them in.
And
then it's preserved.
Yeah. So it is just naturally preserved. That's the thing.
And the herbalist I was sort of, who was the amazing woman who was, you know, a consultant on it, who's called Jane Walrock Gush, she's called the Exmoor Herbalist. You know, she advised that incidentally, the ones that she makes for her own clients, you know, she could have on the shelf for 4 years and they're completely stable. But we have a shelf life of a year on ours.
Okay, do you say to people, keep it in the fridge? Or?
No, you don't need to.
That's really good, because it's always... You forget about it if it's in the fridge. I mean, it's at the back of your fridge. So. I really find that when they say that. Yeah.
I mean, I think also, I think the interesting thing, because it's only sort of, you know, we're only really 6 months in, but the interesting thing is seeing how people use it. That is my...
Well, I think it's time now to go
let's
forth.
Drink up.
Go forth. Okay, so let's... I think, Candida, you've got to make our first drinks for us.
Fantastic. Yeah. So I think we should just start, because this is one I know that you have tasted already. This is one of the original four flavours. So we have four original flavours.
What's it called?
This one is called Love.
And it's got a shocking pink... Or hot pink label.
Hot pink label. And this is the one that you tasted at Lana Citron's lovely book launch.
Yes.
Edible Pleasures. Thank you, Lana. Yeah.
So how much would you put in?
It really depends on taste. It does say dilute according to taste. It's about a teaspoon amount. And each little bottle, you get pretty much 10... this sort of glass size drinks from it.
A tumbler.
10 tumblers full. So the purpose of it really, I remember again having a bit of a kind of, you know, a kind of moment when I was talking to somebody about it who just, you know, wasn't sure what it was about and why should she? And she just sort of suddenly said, oh my goodness, I get it. When I'm having lunch with the ladies, I have it in my handbag. And then rather than having Chardonnay, I can just tip it in and I have the drink for the day. And I was like, exactly.
It's handbag size. It goes next to your lipstick.
It does, exactly. And it's kind of like not a million miles in difference in size.
Also, it can go through airlines. It can
go through airlines.
Yeah, how many mil is it?
So it's 30 mils. It's under the 100 mil limit.
Yeah.
And I'm having actually some quite interesting conversations about airlines at the moment.
Oh, trying to get them on airlines.
Well, somebody's approached me.
Okay, I'm now going to have a sip. Okay, can I guess what's in it or can you tell me?
I don't know. I wonder if you can guess what's in this one.
Slightly floral, definitely.
Yeah, so this one is, this is a very floral kind of summery one. Yeah. This is kind of rose petals, calendula, chamomile, lemon balm.
So this is very soothing to the soul.
Really soothing to the soul, very heartwarming. But I mean, the point of all of them, the secret point, which obviously I can say in a podcast, but I can't, certainly can't put on labels or whatever, is that all of the ingredients, I can say that they're immune boosting because that's a literal statement of fact, but every single one of the potions, because of my own experience, has ingredients in it that are known by herbalists to have anti-tumour properties. So that was also my secret cunning. Why wouldn't I do that with my experience?
Fantastic.
You know, so they've all got these massively, you know, rejuvenating, antioxidant protecting kind of properties.
So we should have them every day then.
Should have them every day. Yeah. And so, it's I think that's again
so
the
tell
important
us about
thing.
Love particularly. What will it do to us?
Well, so lemon balm is a really sort of antiseptic, antibacterial. Calendula is very healing. Chamomile, again, is sort of digestive tonic, very carminative to the system.
Can't stop that. We finished it.
Yum.
Tastes slightly alcoholic. I know that's but what I mean is that it's got more flavour, you know, because that's what you miss, isn't it?
Yeah.
When you don't drink alcohol, you miss that slightly full, slightly bitterness. And this has got it. It's a bit like Angura bitters or whatever they're called.
Yeah.
Angostura bitters. But they've got alcohol in them.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's got that fullness. Same thing. It's a fullness, which is what you crave.
Because mm-hmm. yeah,
that's what I crave. Yeah.
You know, I love that one. I mean, this is one that I kind of is often a kind of go-to for me personally.
Is there any other... So we've got it in sparkling water today.
Yeah.
You said still water. What other ways can we take it?
Some people I have noticed, I don't know whether to encourage them or not, but they put it in warm water and they say it's absolutely delicious.
Yes.
But I haven't done any chemical tests on that, whether it's stable,
etc.
Yeah,
warm water. No, warm water's fine.
Yeah.
It's boiling that would kill it. Warm water would be actually lovely.
People do that.
Yeah.
I have actually made a cake using it.
Ah.
I made a sugar-free cake for one of my daughter's birthdays using, because I thought, could you bake? You can bake with it.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a super strong taste, but it was a kind of like a rose petally heart-shaped kind of cake. So I put some love in it and thought, that's kind of nice. Works.
Lovely.
But that's not its intention.
Love goes inside.
Yeah, nice. Exactly.
So I just want to say the name again and again, Positive Potions. These are all Positive Potions. Okay, now what are we going to have next, Candida?
Well, next one. Why don't we go now for, this is still sticking with the original four, because there are eight in total, and the original four has...
What are the names of the original four?
The original four, thank you for asking, contains Love, which you just had, then Flow, which is one of my personal favourites, which is kind of cleavers, thyme, is a really kind of, as it sounds, it's a real flow. In fact, I was chugging that on the train.
Thyme is really good.
It's really good. Seize off colds, amazing. Cleavers, lymphatic drainage, brilliant. And then also Power, which is a really rootsy one, which men, even in blind tastings, go for the Power. That's really weird. It has a very vague vaguest whiff of Coca-Cola because it's got some dandelion and burdock roots in it.
Oh, wow.
So it's got that rootsy
kind of... Well, that's your Yorkshire connection.
That is the Yorkshire connection.
Sorry, that's a drink where you
drink in Yorkshire. No, it is. Absolutely. I know. Well,
one knows about it.
But do they not
Yorkshire?
know? Oh, no. It was my favourite tipple as a child, dandelion and burdock. There you go.
But we had it with sugar. Very fizzy.
Absolutely. Very fizzy.
What else?
The next one is... This one called Bliss, and this is one which is very exciting. You won a great taste award last year, very exciting. And this one is bright blue, so it's a wonderful party trick because you pour it into a glass. My daughters have nicknamed it Unicorn Dreams. You put it in a glass like this,
beautiful.
And then you you add the water.
Yeah.
But then when you squeeze lemon in it, then you get this absolutely delightful effect where it actually goes from blue to pink.
Oh.
Which it's just fantastic. Delightful.
It looks like a blueberry colour.
Yeah.
And
it's sort of it tastes very nice blue, but I think the taste is also improved, and then it goes
it's like a little chemistry. This is madness. It really is a potion.
Yeah, it is a potion, isn't it? And I just thought that's fun. And this one, when we were doing the Royal Welsh Show and the Anglesey Show, this one was just a top favourite among among sort of teenage girls in particular, just went slightly wild for this. And they were bothering their mothers until they
I really like this.
I love that one.
So yeah, this one is interesting nice with the lemon. Yeah, it is as well. Mm. It's sort of, but there's in not a bad way, but I can see why teenage girls. There's almost a bubblegummy effect.
There is a bubblegummy, and this because this is the only one that has any form of sweetener in it, in the sense that it has stevia, which we grow ourselves in Anglesey, but it's the whole leaf stevia, so it's actually positively good for you, anti-carcinogenic properties, immune boosting. This one also has Japanese butterfly pea flour in it, which gives it that incredible colour. Bit of corn flour, a bit of artichoke leaf, so it's a major liver detoxer. I have somebody who repeat orders it, who gives it to their husband who has Alzheimer's, and she said it's the only thing that gets him up and off and walking around, because it's supposed to have this memory enhancing property, which whether that's just completely hocus pocus, but I just thought
that's interesting. Part of it's believing.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't sell it to her as such, but she said, what's in this? Because it seems to make my husband get up and come for walks with me. I thought that was amazing.
That's incredible. That's
amazing, isn't it?
But on your website, it said people said to you about your business, don't do it. Who are these non-believers?
It was a number of people who were just, especially say people who've got massive experience of gardens
business.
Well, in particular, so it was interesting. It was people who really have experience of gardens, who really knew what they were talking about, who said don't, because they do actually know better in terms of like, my God, what's your plan? Where's your, you know, where is your kind of ground plan, etc.
I didn't have one,
and they, you know, they knew, so that it was sound advice to be cautious rather than just kind of wade straight in. But for me, it's red rag to a bull. And then it was also interestingly, there was the whole thing of talking to different types of people who've done business, because I've never done a business. In my previous life is as a novelist, never done a business. My parents did a business when I was small. I think the excitement of that was something I kind of reclaimed, the whole making stuff. And then, you know, if you build it, they'll come. They made this business out of nothing. And my mother's a novelist also. My father's a painter. And they made this incredible business out of nothing that was sheer excitement, you know, bags load of mail with orders coming through the post and going to on visits in our kind of like Citroen Diane down to London to stockists and, you know, dealing with sort of Indians in warehouse. It was so exciting, this business they did. And I remember that as a child, it kind of really rubbed off. And so I've really lost the thread now.
Deep down, you wanted something similar.
I wanted to do this physical thing, just to make stuff, especially having been unwell, when everything is like, feels like you're losing a grip of, you know, physical reality, to make something practical was just so jolly delightful. But again, I'm going off the tangent here.
Great.
But talking, what really has struck me is these different attitudes towards business. And so I remember speaking to some kind of money people, you know, who know how to do things their way, but it was very much I remember somebody saying to me in the early days, Canada, you need the big guns in here. Let me introduce you to the city boys. And I thought, how wrong is, because I'm doing all of this. I had some money in my bank, my own private savings. This is what I'm doing with, because I believe in it. So I'm not getting funding from.
Yeah, good.
Though I have massive support of, you know, Welsh government lovely grants. Thank you very much. And an organisation called Kawine. Thank you very much indeed for, kind of, you know, little bits of, well, you know, significant bits of loot.
Fantastic. Yeah, because but that's supporting the local. Homegrown industry, which is what
I want to do, is grow like that. But it was so interesting talking to these different attitudes, you know. So
do you think it was because you're a woman?
Yeah, because I'm a woman. And really interesting talking to mates who have done, I mean, for example, Linda Bennett, she knows about business. I asked her about, you know, how you go about it, do you need whatever, and she was like, laughing ahead of, absolutely not. You run with your gut. You start out light, and if you believe in it, of course you put your own money in. I mean, she knows a thing or two about shoes, and doesn't she, business lady? You know, I trust her.
Yeah.
You know, another friend, Steve DeHine, Rick and Margot, who've got this amazing business called Amora Vicks, is the most incredible skincare brand, and they were just like, you just started. I said, how do you begin? He said, so you just get going. You know, just start. Don't do this big city investment thing.
No.
Just kind of run with it somehow. And I had so many people who's, you know, William Kendall, lovely fellow, did Green and Black, you know, who's a kind of mate of a mate. You know, he also gave me a bit of sort of mentoring at the beginning when I asked some now staggeringly embarrassing questions about how you do businesses. But he was just like, if you believe in it, invest in it yourself and just crack on.
That's fantastic.
So I love these, but I love these two attitudes towards business. And so there's this kind of hashtag on Instagram at the moment, which is hashtag heart-centered business, which is like, it's a thing, isn't it?
Well, to me, it sounds like you've sort of reclaimed a Victorian sense of business. It's like the Lost Gardens of Halligan meets, you know, just, okay, what do I have in front of me? And like you said, the secret garden, and also getting stuck in. Getting How stuck do you start? In. You start. You learn by doing.
You learn by doing.
But it definitely seems to come from your heart.
I think that's exactly right. And I think it's sort of, I mean, this is, and the people who have said that to me have all been people who I implicitly think you're on the right side. You know, people whose businesses I just completely admire, they've all just said, you simply do it. You just begin by beginning.
You know, fantastic. Yeah. Well, let's have another potion. Time to celebrate.
Getting really carried away.
Exactly.
Here. Right, so now let me think. Now, probably in order, we should probably next go for. Now, this is the one that when somebody first tasted it, they said, oh my God, it's Christmas in a bottle, which went down quite well at Christmas time. Yeah. And this is called Thrive.
Mm. I would say you put about a hair products amount. Yeah,
you know, they used to tell you a large 50 pence.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
50 pence.
And it just totally depends how strong you like it. Yeah. So, for example, I mean,
What's in Thrive?
Yeah, so Thrive.
Christmas.
This is basically Christmas. And this one is, it's quite a kind of rootsy one. Mm. This is burdock, fennel seeds, not a root, cacao nibs, cinnamon and cloves.
Wow.
So these new four, there's a lot of things in these that we can't currently grow in our garden.
I would say for me, that's an American style that is reminiscent of root beer, otherwise known as sarsaparilla.
That's what flat women always used to drink in Brixton, I remember. They'd be sarsaparilla bottles. I always wonder what it was.
Really?
I do love
that one.
So did you invent this without knowing about root beer?
Yeah, no, it's funny. Actually, this sort of the whole way of... Yeah, no, I mean, I did is the short answer, but the sort of, you know, the longer thing is the kind of... There's this very strange, very tactile, intuitive thing about doing these potions. It really is a physical hands-on. I mean, I remember, again, somebody else, you know, once suggested, oh, maybe I should go to some place where you can go and you can do it in a lab and you can get these taste things. So I was like, what are you talking about? Because actually, where you get it from is you're wafting in the garden, picking up handfuls. You know, you're kind of, I mean, like now I was just in a cafe and there was a bay leaf and I was thinking, there's a thought. And, you know, so you're kind of getting it from everywhere. And then when I came to make these four new flavours, I did the whole putting them together in about half an hour.
Wow.
And it was just a thing, standing there with all my herbs and just think. And then they worked. And
but
then
unconsciously, you've collected all this information without realising. And then it's like a recipe. And then you suddenly bring it all together. And the eureka moment.
Yeah.
So you must have been having so many eureka moments. It must be fantastic.
Eureka moments.
And also the thing about potions, the word potion, and we are women, and you know, the association with witches. Mm. Has anyone ever said this to you?
People have said this to me. The funny things, in parallel, starting a few years before, my older sister, who now lives in Australia, also has a company. It has involved sugar, but it's called The Jam Alchemist.
Wow.
Oh,
God.
And I was like,
what have your parents created?
But it's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, I mean,
yeah,
she does these incredible kind of intuitive kind of herbs, fruit things.
God, isn't that similar?
Yeah, but hers involves sugar, so I keep sending her.
So your parents, are they anything to do with this world?
No, actually, not even at all.
Because quite often. Very creative. Yeah,
but massively creative. Yeah. So father's a painter, mother's a novelist. Yeah. Yeah. And
So they're both creative things. It's developing things through instinct, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, what's next? Well, Don, that was Donna's favourite, by the way.
This is my current... Absolutely.
Well, it goes with your shirt. You're wearing a bright yellow blouse. Blouse is the
saffron.
And I just think that, and to say about these four this one's called Renew.
Okay.
And when I was just saying the thing about, you know, doing them in a kind of like a half an hour, whatever, the interesting thing was is these ones, when I first came up with it, and these were not the names originally, but when I first sort of thought them up, I was arranging them very much around the seasons. So Renew was very much springtime, the next one, Flourish, was very much summer. The one called Replenish was really an autumnal one, and Thrive, the one we've just had, was kind of, you know, deep winter. And they seem to arrange themselves in that way around these four seasons. I was, in fact, going to call them four seasons, then I thought somebody won't drink spring because it's summer and they'll get all confused, so I thought I'd give them names.
Also, they've already got, you know, your other ones have just got a one-word name, which is much easier. So this is bright yellow, so must have turmeric
good
in
Lord,
it.
Good Lord, I love that. I do love this one.
So what's in it?
So this one does have, indeed, it does have turmeric in it, and this is is also cinnamon, cardamom pods, cayenne pepper, coriander seed, and a little bit of chili.
Wow, I'm going to like this.
And
I'm
this one
like
I
this.
Do adore. Yeah. I adore yeah. it.
Yeah.
It's scrumptious. And this was a funny one because actually I was...
That's my favourite.
It's bitter sunshine.
Yeah, yeah. I really like that one. Yeah.
The funny one with this one is that I was actually, just before I came up with the first, well, the last four, it is like that. Fantastic.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you want a copywriting job?
Yeah.
But I did sort of, that was an odd one because I was actually filling my water bottle of a morning with, a tablespoon of, cinnamon, tablespoon of turmeric, tablespoon of chili, cayenne pepper, whatever, and all the ingredients that are now in that. And I was just drinking this every morning and I thought to myself, oh my goodness, talk about being under your nose.
Yeah.
And I thought that has to be a potion because I'm just drinking it every single day.
Yeah.
And I've got it's left a flavour in my mouth. It's slightly warming it, it's fizzing. It's got real roundness, that one. And also the chili or the cayenne pepper, which is brilliant for kickstarting your gut, for your taste buds.
Exactly.
All these things are sort of, they're very much rejuvenating, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah,
very enlivening and warming at this time of year.
Yeah, I love this one.
Actually, I'd really like this one warmed up. Mm. Yeah, yeah.
You know, people have that, we do have that warmed sometimes.
So what if someone wanted to add honey or something? What would you say to them?
Yeah, I mean, I think if they wanted to, it's, you can do what you want with it. I know some naughty people who say that some very naughty friends of mine.
Prosecco!
basically. Prosecco. So some naughty people say the love one is just makes an amazing rose petal martini. I couldn't possibly comment. And so people do that, and the blue one apparently is really, really good with botanical gins. But that's not the idea, is it? The idea is you're supposed to be stepping away from the whole sugar thing and the kind of booze thing. But you can obviously do what you want with them.
Exactly.
Do what you
want.
There
are weekdays and weekends.
Thank you so much for coming on to Radio Gorgeous today.
An absolute pleasure.
You are just a ray of sunshine, isn't she? Yeah, you really are. You really are. Really, really admire you for what you've done.
Thank you
so much. And
doing.
And you've done it all on your own.
Yay! Oh, no, lots of help. Lots of help. Lots of
exactly.
help.
Hopefully
people.
That your garden will achieve its former glory of 40 gardeners.
Gorgeous. Gorgeous. That is the aim.
So,
that is the aim.
Thank you very much, Candida Merrick, Positive Potions, for coming on to Radio Gorgeous.
Thank you very much for having me.
And if you want to find out more, go to positivepotions.co.uk. You can always find fabulous women on Radio Gorgeous.